Kimchi smells like the earth. It feels like a salad.
Looks like a rainbow.
It sounds like soda pop.
It bubbles.
So get all your vegetables that you want to be in your kimchi, which can be almost anything. Chop them up. Salt them. And you need to pound and knead the kimchi to get the salt to make all the liquid come out of the vegetables.
It's very therapeutic.
Your spices, your peppers, your ginger, your garlic.
Ferment for 3 days, let it sour, and you'll have kimchi.
Make that with your cabbage in October, and in February you open up that jar and you can taste your harvest.
When you add thyme to something, when you ferment it, there's a added value.
And it slows you down. You don't get instant gratification.
The guru of the fermentation revival, the guy who gets credited with jump-starting it, is Sandor Katz. He's a food activist based in Brooklyn and author of The Bible of the Movement, a big fat book called The Art of Fermentation. And Sandor's gateway drug was sauerkraut. His home garden produced way too many cabbages one year, and he had to do something with them. And then he got hooked.
You know, I make yogurt, I've made kefir, I've made cheeses, kombucha, I've baked with sourdough, I make miso every year, I've made soy sauce, I make tempeh, I've made mabi and kvass.
Wow, wait, I don't even know what some of these things are.
Well, sure. I mean, you know, fermentation is practiced in every part of the world. And, you know, frequently it's been immigrants to the U.S. from faraway places who have told me of the existence of, you know, some of the more exotic ferments that weren't familiar to me. In the case of mabi, a woman from Puerto Rico actually sent me the bark of the mabi tree that I needed in order to make this fermented beverage.
What is it?
It's a decoction of the bark of the tree along with some other spices that is briefly fermented in order to carbonate it. And it's incredibly delicious. If you enjoy bitter flavors, it's like this, you know, bittersweet soda, basically.
Well, aside from so many fermented foods tasting delicious, these days, there's a lot of focus on the health benefits. What makes them healthier?
Well, you know, the process of fermentation transforms foods nutritionally in a number of distinctive ways. You know, number one, I would call predigestion. And this is the idea that the nutrients in the food are actually digested in some way before we eat them. So the reason why soybeans became so popular among the vegetarian subcultures in the West is that they are considered to be the plant source food with the most concentrated protein. But you never hear about people sitting down for dinner and eating a bowl of soybeans, mostly because it's impossible for us to effectively digest them. And so the Asian cultures that pioneered soy agriculture all developed different ways of fermenting the soybeans, which effectively digest the proteins into amino acids, the building blocks of proteins, before we eat them. Minerals in fermented foods generally become much more bioavailable as well.
You were saying before that there's such an enormous variety of fermented foods. If you look around the world, what are some of those that would seem strangest or oddest to Western consumers?
First of all, let me just contextualize this and point out that fermentation creates strong flavors. If you walk into a gourmet food store anywhere and look around and think about the nature of the foods that we are celebrating, that we're putting up on this pedestal, you know, they're almost all products of fermentation. For instance, in the realm of cheese, you know, I have come to love like stinky cheese that I could, you know, smell from 50 feet away. But I've learned that, like, you know, when I get a piece of cheese like that and invite some friends over to share it with me, not everybody loves it. You know, some people will open the door and they'll say, did something die in here? And they would never for a minute think about putting that into their mouths. So looking around the world, I mean, you know, in far northern places, the fermentation of fish is a survival practice. You know, in the Arctic Circle, fish are mounded or buried in pits in the summertime when waterways are accessible. And then that's what people survive on in the wintertime.
So they bury this fish in big pits, and then in the winter they come back and dig it up again?
Yeah. So, you know, that's the kind of thing that, you know, it's a survival practice. People who grow up around it, like, learn to love it. And, you know, generally people who've never encountered it before, you know, just find it a very scary idea. They find the flavors and aromas of it to be, you know, really challenging.
So one of the things we wanted to do in this hour was think a bit about fermentation as a metaphor. And I'm assuming this must be something you've thought about. I mean, do you wind up seeing principles of fermentation at work in other areas of our life besides food and cooking?
Well, sure. And I mean, and the word itself, like, I circle it whenever I see it in a magazine or a newspaper, you know, cultural ferment, political ferment, intellectual ferment, social ferment. The word fermentation derives from the Latin word fervere, which means to boil. To me, the metaphorical notions of fermentation, you know, it has to do with the bubbles, a period of cultural ferment or social ferment. You know, that's people being excited. That's people literally being bubbly. There are ideas that they want to share with other people. And so, you know, they want to talk about them. They become irrepressible. That's the bubbliness. So I would say that, you know, fermentation really is a it's an engine of social change.
I was thinking that on the one hand, you know, fermentation seems very scientific, right? It's almost like home cooking is a form of lab science. But thinking about it this way, I realize, you know, that it's also very magical. You put food someplace, you go away, and you come back and find it mysteriously transformed.
Well, and it's really only in the last 150 years since Louis Pasteur's research that it has become something scientific. Up until that time, I think it was really regarded as something, you know, more akin to magic. There's always been a certain amount of mysticism about fermentation.
Really?
You know, if we look at the Roman Catholic Mass, it's not a random substance that, you know, transubstantiates into the blood of Jesus Christ. It's wine. So, yes, I think that there's a sort of a huge amount of religious iconography organized around fermentation. You know, it's been recognized as a mystical force in people's lives.
Sandor Katz is the author of The Art of Fermentation.